Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Our guest tonight arrived in Australia a couple of weeks ago in a manner that could only be described as spectacular. He was aboard one of four massive voyaging canoes that entered Sydney Harbour in conjunction with the once-a-decade World Parks Congress, highlighting conservation issues across the Pacific. The Reverend James Bhagwan is Secretary for Communication and Overseas Mission of the Methodist Church in Fiji and chaplain to the voyage. James, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this evening.
That's a pretty great way to come into Sydney Harbour.
I tell you. There are a lot of worse ways to do, and air travel is one of them.
Yes, I don't imagine you sailed those canoes across the Pacific, but still, the symbolic nature of it, what was the essence of the symbolism of coming in those great canoes to the harbour?
Well, the voyage itself, which is named Moa, and Moa in Polynesian usually refers to the bow of the vaka, the canoe. It also refers to direction. And the significance of this is that these four vaka, which came from the Cook Islands, Samoa, Fiji, and Aotearoa, New Zealand, are entirely powered by the wind. It's not an easy sail. It's not a pleasure sailing event. And the significance of that is this is the way in which the Pacific can bring their message to Australia and especially to the World Parks Congress. And the idea of the theme behind Moa was to be guided by nature, guided by the ancient wisdom of the Pacific, Pacific sciences, perhaps you might want to call it. And this is a time referring to when the navigators used the stars, the moon, the sun
and
to navigate.
And indeed, how the Pacific was populated.
Absolutely. And this is something to show that we have something to offer to the world. We have a message about conservation, about living in a right relationship with nature. And that is the message and the promise of the Pacific people to the world.
And, of course, conservation issues in the Pacific are much more than parks for people to visit and take spectacular photographs, even though that's part of the issue. With thousands of low-lying islands, we're talking about the frontline states in the battle over climate change. Indeed, states which will, I guess, be very much the canaries in the coal mine of sea level rising.
Absolutely. I mean, the messages that were delivered earlier this month when the vaka came in, the four vaka came in to the National Maritime Museum, the messages were delivered about the ocean, about fisheries and the issue of overfishing in the Pacific, and of course climate change, with the message delivered by the President of the Republic of Kiribati, Anote Tong, talking about the reality of climate change, islands disappearing, people losing their very country, you know, in a few years.
We're already seeing evidence of this in some islands, in some of the Pacific states, aren't we?
That's right. You don't have to go far. Even for where I come from Fiji, some of the low-lying areas, some of the coastal areas, we witness sand erosion, the erosion of the beach, on a regular basis. About 20 minutes from where I live, there's a settlement, and what used to be a cemetery is now in the ocean. You know, and that's the reality that we face.
There's some great synchronicity with this, of course, because that coming in of the canoes, sailing in of the canoes, coincided with the announcement that Barack Obama and President Xi had signed up on emissions reduction.
Absolutely. The second day of the World Parks Congress, that was something that Anote Tong, President Anote Tong, was alluding to when we're talking about collaboration and working together. You know, being a chaplain, perhaps I was thinking that's a lot of, you know, divine coordination, but much, you know, significance. And the idea was to herald this event and the call of the Pacific people in a way that maintained the integrity of the Pacific Islanders.
There's something very interesting here in that religion is still very important as part of the fabric of Pacific Island culture. Christianity in particular, you're out of the Methodist tradition. The Methodists have a very strong background here, and I'd like to talk about that in a few minutes. But the way in which religion is still deeply enmeshed with your sense of how you present yourself to the world, conservation here becomes a critical issue that has direct religious synthesis with it. a tie-in with it. That is, how you view the world as part of the handiwork of God.
Yes, absolutely.
So theology and religion here are potentially very powerful forces in talking to people about climate change.
I think that's a very important point you raised. In the Pacific, in Fiji we use the word vanua. In New Zealand it's whenua or whenua in other Pacific Island countries. The idea of the land and the people, and since time immemorial, there've been that sort of integrated relationship that the people are of the land, of creation. And then when you introduce that to the Christian understanding of being created, being part of creation, you know, that what God created, while God may have, from the Christian perspective, called creation into being and made us with his own hands, we are still very much part of creation. And from a Methodist perspective in Fiji, we've recently just launched our connectional plan for the church. We going through our experiences over the last 10 years or so, looking at where we are as a church and where we need to go. We developed a set of 12 pillars. And what's very interesting is pillar number one is the salvation of souls. Pillar number 12 connects directly stewardship of the environment and creation. And the understanding of that, in that understanding is that salvation, from our perspective, is not just about our soul, but about all of creation and our role in that.
Indeed, one could suggest, if you're taking a Genesis up approach to the Bible, that in fact the creation care could be number one because it involves the whole picture.
Yeah.
And the soul thing could be number 12. You could actually suggest that perhaps the way forward for the church is to begin to adopt something like creation care as the key linkage to the world, if you're talking about a world crisis.
The Pacific Conference of Churches, which had its General Assembly early last year in the Solomon Islands, has made a number of commitments in their resolutions at the Assembly, which not only give work to the Assembly itself or the Conference of Churches itself, but also calls on its member churches to look at issues dealing directly with the environment, looking towards becoming green churches, in terms of what we do to stewardship of creation, how we treat the environment, how we educate and mobilize our members. And as you mentioned, the Pacific, religion, and in particular Christianity, for many Pacific Islanders, is a very strong part or important part of their life. And so recognizing that, we recognize, for example, in Fiji, the churches are the largest religious or community organizations or community groups. And so we are able to mobilize people in a way that connects them not only intellectually, not only practically, but also spiritually. So you get a full, mind, body, spirit, if you want to use that sort of language, connection on the issue.
And this, the conservation issue or care of creation, connects religion with civil society in a very concrete way.
Yes. I think for many years, the type of theology that we've had in the past has been more geared towards ownership rather than stewardship. But as we see the effects for ourselves, and because we've been seeing these effects, not just in terms of sea level rise, but increased strong weather patterns, strong cyclone seasons, extended high weather patterns where we get droughts and things like that, we're starting to respond to that and reflect on it and say, where is our responsibility in all of this, as a community, as a community of faith? Yeah.
It takes you back to an interesting Methodist principle, of course, of Wesley. That is the responsibility of us. It's no good to go and sort of mess things up and expect God to come and intervene and clean things up for you. I'll say a little prayer and God will come in and clean it up.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been reflecting on this year about the general principles of Wesley. The first one is, first of all, do no harm, and then do good. Do no harm, do good, and stay connected or stay in love with God. These three general principles. And if you go back to that first one about in all your relationship, whether it's with, whether it's with people or with the environment, the least harm is possible.
Let's talk for a moment about the importance of that. In take yourself as an example. You've grown up in the church and you chose to become a minister in the church. So clearly your religion is still an important part of the way you see your life working out. What's the important element in that journey for you? What's significant about your Christianity for you? What's the essence of it that says to you, I've got to keep this central to my life? This is what makes my life cohere, if you like.
Well, for me, I've always been very strong on the simple message of love. Love for each other. Our love for God is not just something that is manifested in our religiosity, the number of times we go to church. And when we understand the love of God manifested in Christ, for me, that's a very important thing. And the fact that then our responsibility is very practical. We are called to respond by loving each other, not just those we know, but those that are the stranger, the other. And coming from a minority community in Fiji, this is something that's very important for me. The fact that we engage with others. Sometimes we have had been on different sides of issues in our country. But the fact that when you can look at someone, and the challenge for me to try and see God's presence in that person, it can be very difficult. But also that our faith and our spirituality must be practical. As you mentioned earlier, I'm not the type of person who says, say a prayer and go off and do your thing. Where is your place in creation? And I think living in the Pacific, when we look out and we see the wonderful creation that we have, it's very hard not to connect spiritually with the divine being.
On Sunday night, our guest is the Reverend James Bhagwan, Secretary for Communications and Overseas Mission of the Methodist Church in Fiji. James, let's talk about Fiji for a moment. Great change in Fiji over the last few months. There's been an election. Bainimarama is now the Prime Minister, Frank Bainimarama. It's been a difficult path over the last few years, and the Methodist Church has played a central role, an evolving role in this over many years. Just describe for us the path, briefly, where you've been, where you are now.
Thank you. The Methodist Church was for the first time perhaps at loggerheads with the state, with the regime, after the 2006 takeover by the military. We found ourselves in unfamiliar territory, to be honest. The past of the Methodist Church, as you may be aware, in Fiji has not been that good in terms of how we deal with political crises. We've had situations where we've made wrong decisions based on ethnocentralism or ethno-nationalism. Decisions have been made more in line with one particular vein of thinking or one particular ideology rather than being guided by faith or by our doctrines. For the Methodist Church, we entered into a position where the church took a stand against the military in terms of support and cooperation.
What were the principles on which the church was basing its stand?
Well, the immediate principle was the fact that it was an illegal takeover of government. However it was perceived by those who took over, however it was legitimized later on, it was still, as far as the church was concerned officially, an illegal government.
So this was complicated, wasn't it? Because in terms of the illegality, Frank Bainimarama was saying, yes, it might have been a coup, but he was doing it in the interests of a multicultural Fiji, not an ethnocentric Fiji.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, and so it's the challenge of whether the ends justifies the means or the means is what is important. You know, the ethical dilemma that in that situation. So the church, took a stand that it would not support the military government, which meant that even when the regime instituted the National Council for Building a Better Fiji in 2008 or 2007, 2008 onwards, to come up with the National Charter for Change, which was the blueprint for the way forward for the regime, ultimately culminating in the constitution that was promulgated last year by the president. The church stepped out of that. It refused to take part. And we suffered. From 2009, when the constitution at that time, the 1997 constitution, was abrogated, the church really found itself at loggerheads with the military and
it
was
could
oppressed.
Have,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. You said that the church was suppressed.
Yes.
And this meant violence and harassment?
Well, harassment. you know, we were with the constitution not in play anymore. Government was ruled, being run by decrees, and so we had a public emergency decree in place. And using the powers given in that, our conferences were stopped, our annual meetings were stopped. We were not able to have any official meeting without a police permit, which we were not readily given. So from 2009, for 3 years, till 2012, when we had our first mini conference, we were not able to hold our annual conferences, which meant we were not able to have elections of officials. And the Methodist Church operates in a democratic system, which was quite the irony of it all. We were trying to be democratic, but we were not able to do so.
Did this create internal tensions within the church between those who genuinely believed that a multicultural Fiji, the ideal of it, needed to be supported, against those who said, in lining up with the opposition to the coup, you're actually supporting essentially what would have been an ethnocentric model, that is, a model that was wrong in principle?
This was very much the dilemma for many, many Methodists at the time. But as this tension developed, and, you know, as we were in the midst of not being able to hold conferences and not being able to hold meetings and other forms of harassment by the regime, the church leaders decided to look for a way forward. So eventually we were able to come to a point of dialogue, and realizing that while we have a principal stand, it's important also that we remember that we are called also to be peacemakers and to find ways in which we could help the regime find a way forward with us as well. And so that process took a number of years. And from the internal part of the church life and church development, this is how our 12 pillars were developed as the way forward. It was also a time when the church was reflecting. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Methodist Church in Fiji becoming an autonomous church from the then Methodist Church in Australasia. And so as part of that move towards it, the leaders of the church were reflecting on where we have been, where we are, and where we need to go. And we realized that for the last half of that 50 years, for 25 years, we've had issues in terms of the influence of politics and traditional life in the church life, the challenge of being able to speak prophetically. And so as the church began to look at that, we decided we need to look at a new way forward. And that's been something I think that's been good for the church.
This must have been a genuinely deep rift for many people in the church, for whom the church had become integrated properly into the traditional framework of Fiji, the chiefly system and all of that. It had become bonded in many ways to the church. The church was seen as a culturally authentic expression.
That's right. In Fiji, we have what's known as the three pillars of society. The three pillars are in the Fijian language, the Itoke language, we say the Lotu, the Vanua, and the Matnitu, which is the church, the traditional leadership, and the state. And those are sort of the pillars on which Fijian society sits. And the challenge has been that over time, while there were originally three separate pillars, there has been this confusion of roles, perhaps. There has been a sort of hybridity where people moving backwards backwards and forwards kind of get lost as to where they are. And
on whose behalf they are speaking.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been a challenge in the past. And so, it's been very important for the church to find this way forward. As someone who's not indigenous Fijian or indigenous Itoke, I see that the move is something that's looking to make the church a lot more inclusive than it has in the past.
So where are things now in terms of the church and the state and this issue of a multi-ethnic Fiji?
Well, to look at the issue of church and state, we have said, and this year, because we had the elections, for the first time we said as a church, we will remain apolitical. We will not support any political party. We will, if you were invited to pray for people who are having gatherings, things, we'll be there. So if you had looked in, you know, sometimes I would see in the media coverage, you'd see one political party having a meeting and there's a Methodist minister praying the opening prayer there. The next party, they're also there. So we were pretty much everywhere. But the challenge for us was to make sure that we did not support publicly as a church one particular political party.
Is there still a what you might call a traditionalist rump left there who said, no, this is, we're breaking this apart. We're breaking something that's deep tradition apart here.
You know, in the current situation where we have this new constitution, which was promulgated, not brought in by a House of Parliament, and that has been one of the issues of contention, but the fact that we have a constitution is important. It is a constitution in which all citizens of Fiji are called Fijian. And this is a term that has been reserved since independence for a particular ethnicity, the indigenous people of Fiji. In the past, we were Fiji Islanders. But the idea is that, you know, wherever we go, when we come out of Fiji, people call us Fijian. And the idea of having, a single identity. The fact is now that it's part of the constitution, so it's a moot point to discuss or debate whether it's good or not. The idea for the church, however, has been to move towards recognizing the diversity of communities within our community of faith. And one of the things was that traditionally the symbol of the Methodist Church in Fiji since we became self-governing in 1964 was the takia. And this is the outrigger sailing canoe. So it's single hull, mono hull with an outrigger and a sail. And that's symbolized with a cross on the sail. And that symbolized the taking of the gospel from island to island. We have shifted as part of our new way forward, what we call in the Itoke language, Nalako Yanivo, which means the new exodus. So in our new exodus, we realize that the winds of change that have been blowing have been blowing this small vessel off course as we entered into the late 20th century. The winds of change of globalization, of decolonization, and the other issues that have been coming up, political issues, have really blown this small vessel off course. So we know that to sail the rough seas, as my friends have done on these four vaka, you need a bigger boat. And the best type of boat for this sort of situation is the double hull canoe. In Fiji, we call it ndrua. And the symbol of going from a small takia to the big ndrua is that now we are a bigger community. We're a more inclusive community. It's a time for us to work together to realize that every single person aboard this ndrua, this canoe, has a part to play. So it's not something that is only for the indigenous people, the minority groups. We have the Indo-Fijian community, we have the community from the islands of Rotuma and Rambi, the Micronesian community, and all those in between. There is a place for them.
It speaks to the power of symbols, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the Pacific Islanders, we take our symbolism very seriously. And I think that was one of the important things on the 12th when the four Vaka came in. I was watching some of the mainstream media as they're coming, because it was a long program. You know, the Vak, one by one, they came in, the drums were beating, conch shells blowing. We had the first people doing the smoking ceremony, and then we presented our, traditional presentations and things. And I was saying to one of one of the reporters, I said, you have to understand, this adds power from where we come from. And this is us saying, not only is this something that you'd see in a tourist brochure or when you go on holiday, this is who we are. This is how we see the world. And it's very important in a very increasingly globalized world that we maintain our cultural integrity and our connection with symbols as a way of communicating who we are and what we believe.
It gives you the power to step into the future.
Absolutely.
What do you see the future now as the critical issues facing the church in Fiji and, by extension, across the Pacific and across our region?
Well, as we move forward, we're in a rapidly... The Pacific is facing rapid social change with the onset of globalization. We have the political issues that we've faced. We've got globalization in terms of cultural homogenization from the West, or from the north, if you want to put it that way. We have global capitalism going on. You know, the multinational corporations coming, take our resources, maybe use our labor, but we don't get much out of that. We've got all that going on, and at the same time, we've got the issue of the environment, which for me, I think, will be the most critical issue of the 21st century, the most critical thing facing the Pacific and the world. We're now talking in the Pacific about climate refugees. We have, you know, our brothers and sisters from Kiribati and Tuvalu who are going to basically be landless in the very near future. So these are things that I think for us are very important, especially the issue of climate change and the environment.
And here is where theology once again intersects with civil society in the most powerful way.
Absolutely. We have been very fortunate, I think. These issues, because they cut across society, have been able to bring the church to re-engage with civil society. In the past, because our theology, our outlook has been somewhat conservative, there's been a gap between what's going on in society, what's happening in the country in development, issues of development, sustainable development, the environment, and the civil society have come in to fill that gap. But one thing they cannot offer is that deep spiritual reflection that connects with the people. And I think that is something that if we all work together, you know, if we're able to find that common ground and work together, which these issues provide, to work for the common good, it's going to be something that we can work together as a wider community.
James, a final question. There's been a lot of talk about tourism and whether you should go, whether you should not go to Fiji. What's the attitude now to sort of people coming in and sort of spending time holidaying in Fiji? Is it sort of borders open, everybody welcome and should
get along? Everybody's welcome. You know, I'm biased, of course, because I live there. But I tell you something, I'm a person who chooses to live there. And, you know, it's for me, it's the most beautiful place to live. People are authentic with their warmth and their smiles. You know, it's none of this smiling but bared teeth. It's the hearts are warm, you know, and the tourism industry has picked up quite a bit. And, you know, there's tourism for everybody. So if you like to stay in the hotels, the big fancy things, and pretend that you're really not anywhere but just the hotel, that's fine. But we have, you know, we're now moving into sustainable tourism. Tourism where you go and you're on an island and, you know, it's not television and all those things. You're out, you're connecting with nature, you're connecting with, you know, the community there. Although I live in Fiji, although I live in Suva, my family goes on holidays around because otherwise we don't get out, you know, spend time together. And, you know, I prefer to do things in my own country. It's a beautiful place. We've got elections, everything's running smoothly now, pretty much in terms of tourism, and the flights are quite regular from Australia as well. So please come and visit and pop by and say hi while you're there as well.
Reverend James Bhagwan, great to have you with us.
It's been a pleasure.
James is Secretary for Communication and Overseas Mission for the Methodist Church in Fiji. A great pleasure to have you as a guest on Sunday night. We'll go out with a little moment of reflection. Otis Redding, why?
Sitting on the dock of the bay, that was what I was doing as those vaka came in on the 12th. So, yeah, this is what we do. We say goodbye to them as we sit on the dock of the bay and we welcome them in the same way.
James Bhagwan, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me tonight.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.